Everyone, thank you for taking the time and lending your ears to these various conversations. Very excited to share all the guests that I have with you this season. And in order for this season to be a success, I need you guys to help share the word and spread the love of the What Makes You Tick pod. While you're listening, please take a moment to like or subscribe to the podcast wherever you are. And as always, I really appreciate all the help and the support that you guys have given me.
So there was always that hiding, but I just thought it was being clever. Like, I'm smart, you know what I mean? I just don't want people knowing my business. But as an addict, you're clever. Addicts are very clever. So there was a lot of that going on. And then trying to stop, because I knew then that it was a problem, and then I tried to stop, and that was so hard. Like, that was torture. So then the problems in my head just escalated massively.
Ladies and gentlemen, everybody, welcome back to What Makes You Tick. I have a very, very, very exciting guest in with me today. He's a good friend. We grew up in Limerick together, although I got slagged there just beforehand for having a bit more of a Dublin accent than a Limerick accent now, so I might have to adjust that as we go along. But I'd like everybody to welcome Shane Lennon to the podcast. Shane, good to see you, pal.
Thanks, Stephen. Appreciate it, pal. You really built that one up there. An exciting guest. I'm going to let everyone down now. Yeah. It's going to be as boring as I can.
Not at all. It's funny. We grew up in Limerick, and I think we'll touch on it in a minute. Because growing up in Limerick is so different to growing up in Dublin. But I've been watching you over the last number of years, and obviously seeing you developed to become the man that you are, and knowing you from when you were young, it's been an unbelievable journey. So that's one of the reasons why I wanted you to come on, is to, I think there's something in your journey that you could obviously share with others, and that they'll learn from it. So looking forward to getting into this and see where the conversation goes.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Stephen, and I really appreciate you asking me to come on as well. And I know we spoke about this in the past, is that if one person listens to this and somebody gets something from it, that's a job done, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I know, and I've done something similar to this before, and so many people got in touch with me afterwards, and it helped a lot of people.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm just about helping people these days as much as I can. So, yeah, and well done to you for setting this up. It's amazing, pal, that people get an opportunity to listen to people coming on here, sharing their stories. And spreading a word.
I must say, I'm very lucky, because the whole premise of the pod is to help people, right? And you've been helping people in so many different ways over the last number of years, especially
these days.
And I think that's probably it, is that you found a way to help yourself first and then help others. And now that's exactly what I'm trying to do with the pod, is first through what conversations help me. And there's a selfishness to it, and it has to be, because I believe if it's helping me, then I'll be able to help others. And I think that when people listen to this and eavesdrop on the conversation, that they'll take something from it as well. So I appreciate it. And listen, it's going to be, for me, this is going to be a kind of like a deep dive back into history for us, because we met, I think, when we were about 7 or 8 in JFK in Limerick, and we went to school there. And it was funny, because Shane and I would have played, we would have played soccer against each other. We would have had a laugh. And in the schoolyard, there was always competition in the schoolyard for who got the goals to play with the tennis ball and then to kick around. And we were typically on the opposite team at different stages, but it would sometimes get a little bit heated.
I was a brave boy, because as you can see, you're a much bigger boy than I am. But it never stopped me.
You're a big heart.
I had a lot of ambition for sure. Yeah.
But it's gas, because from that to now, our lives we've crossed paths at different stages. We have mutual friends completely separate to Limerick, which is really interesting.
Yeah.
But our lives are quite different, but your life has been remarkable as far as I'm concerned. I'd love us to maybe touch on it and to start. Let's go back to the start, because right now you're a yoga instructor and probably one of the best yoga instructors in Ireland. and your kind of constant kind of path of growth and learning. And you were even telling me this morning that you're just doing some more exams. But that person is very different to that 12, 13, 14 year old that we grew up together with. And then since then, so much has happened. Maybe just give people a bit of a sense of what life was like for you starting off and growing up in Limerick.
Yeah, so immediately when you say, I always just go, what's the thought that comes into the head? That's where I'm kind of, therapy got me there, by the way. Okay. Yeah, what's the thought that comes into the head? And the thought that comes into the head immediately when I think back to my childhood is the death of my brother. That was kind of the one that, it's the first memory that I have. It's the one that really kind of, I suppose the one that when there was a change, it was the one that my mom said, you know, I see the change there, like, well, first of all, it was probably the his birth. He was born with cerebral palsy, mm-hmm. so there was lack of oxygen to the brain when he was born, and he was brain damaged. So my parents had to send a lot of attention towards him, and my mom knew that I was kind of craving that attention then. And I craved that attention quite a lot. I always wanted to be the center of attention, the center of the room. So that was kind of like at a young age. Then my brother died. And then my mom said there was a shift again, something changed again. That was...
So let's talk about that. How old were you when you were...
I was 7 when he died. Yeah. I found him. So we were down in Kilkee, the west of Clare. And my mom asked me to go in and check on him, see if he was okay. Went in, checked. He was still asleep. Came out, checking him again. Went in, checked. He was still asleep. And then she went in and checked, and he had passed away. And then for a long time, I thought I should have known that he was dead.
How old is he?
7 at the time, yeah. And I just had this thing in my head of maybe he was alive the first time I went in, but I didn't check. And so I kind of carried that for a while, and it was something that came up later on. So I'm an addict as well. I'm a recovering addict. And it came up when I was in the treatment center. Something that I kind of carried for a couple of years was that I thought this was my fault, and I was kind of blaming myself. And something that I could never, ever say out loud, because like somebody might turn around and go, it's your fault your brother's dead. Like, you know, so I just could never have that conversation with somebody. Now I went into treatment and I did my counseling, and they were like, think of a 7-year-old boy. Would you blame that child? And I'm like, no. And they're like, well, there you go. Like, come on, like, you know, snap out. And when it was put to me like that, I understood. But at the time, I just couldn't understand it, and I couldn't voice it. I couldn't say it out loud. So there was a bit of that there for a while. I carried that for a while, and center of attention, always trying to be the big man, trying to pick steep fights with you in the schoolyard. Yeah. So I always tried to big up myself as much as I can. That's where that kind of fighting background came from.
And do you think you were like, it was just, there was an anger there?
Yeah.
Like, because at 7 years old, like, Jesus Christ, you don't know your arse from your elbow, you know? Then all of a sudden, then you're after losing your brother. And it's like, hold on, what, how do you compartmentalize that at 7?
Yeah.
But like, there must have been a rage then. Like that kind of fills in and is like takes over and goes, do you know what? I might be able to express it with words, but I'm going to express it differently.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was an angry boy. Like, I was a very angry boy. Like, and I mean, we went to the same school. Like, there was fights after school every day, down to the laneway, fighting. It was just always, there was always fighting when we were growing up.
Yeah.
And it was actually surprised me when I moved up to Dublin first. I went out in Harcourt Street. And we came out of one of the clubs on Harcourt Street, and I turned around to my mate and I was like, well, how come nobody's fighting? And he was like, what? He was like, why is there no fights? And he was like, why would there be fights? And I just, because when you grow up like down in Limerick, like after a nightclub, there's just fights. And I don't know if it's still like that down there.
Street.
Yeah, like there was just always fights. And like, that was just the kind of like how I grew up. I just thought that that's how it was. Because I was angry. I had a lot of aggression built up in me, which is sometimes still there. Like, yeah, I teach yoga now and everything, and I've like definitely found a much calmer Shane. But like there's still like I still have that, like it's always still there. I have to like it, I have to keep it under control.
You mentioned, so you're an addict, right? Maybe let's talk to that as well, because like what area, how did that, what were you addicted to and what age did that begin?
Everything and anything.
Really?
Yeah.
Like how
did it's hard to kind of pinpoint honestly, like the first time I took an ecstasy tablet, I just thought problem solved.
Really?
Problem solved. I used to dream, right? I used to have this thing that like, how could I get an ecstasy tablet so big that I would just be able to nibble on it and stay like this forever? Like I genuinely used to think that.
Wow.
Right? Because
what was the feeling like?
It's just like, and I'm not promoting drugs. They're horrendous. Like they're horrendous. They're not good for you. Like from my perspective, they were very bad for me. But the feeling was so euphoric. And because I had so much gone on in my head, it was the release.
Okay.
It was self-medication. Like it was like, right, this, I take this thing and everything that's gone on in my head just goes away. And I feel amazing. Right? So like, no wonder I got addicted.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying like from the first one, I was like taking them all the time, but it was progressive. Like, you know, it was fun at the beginning. It was a nice feeling. And then it just got worse and worse. And it was hidden. Like, you know, I progressed to cocaine and there was a lot of cocaine use. And I think the time I recognized when it was probably an issue was a drug dealer came over to my house to drop stuff off. And I said, I'll come in for a second. And I took a line. And he was like, what are you doing? And I was like, I'm just taking a line. He was like, but you're on your own. I was like, yeah. And he was like, yeah, dude, you probably shouldn't be doing that stuff on your own. And I remember thinking, now, if the drug dealer is telling me not to do the drugs, that could be a problem.
That was the moment when you were like...
So that was the kind of moment. Now, I knew that, like, I was probably taking... You know, if I really think about it, I was lying to myself because I was getting drugs from different drug dealers so that the drug dealer wouldn't know how much I was taking. So I'd get a certain amount off this person, wow, a certain amount off that person. So there was always that hiding, but I just thought it was being clever. Like, I'm smart, you know what I mean? I just don't want people knowing my business. But as an addict, you're clever. Mm. Addicts are very clever. Like, there was a lot of that going on. And then trying to stop. Because I knew then that it was a problem, and then I tried to stop, and that was so hard. Like, that was torture. So then the problems in my head just escalated massively. And there was times
How did you try to stop? Like, what was the
process? So the process of stopping was my daughter was born. So my daughter was born when I was 16. I had been taking drugs probably for 3 years at that stage, maybe. Yeah, I took my first pill when I was very young, like probably 13 when I took my first one.
Mm-hmm.
So 13, 14, grand, 15, you know, it started to be, you know, it was maybe a bit of a problem. 16, Caitlin was born. And then it was like, right, okay, I need to get my shit together here. Like, you know, I'm a dad now, you know, I need to cop on. So I tried to stop. And I did for a while, not really a problem. And then I, like every couple of months, I might go out and end up taking drugs. And then the couple of months started getting shorter and shorter and shorter. And then it was every weekend. Then there was, you know, like it was all just creeping back up again. That's when it all piled in on top of me. That was probably around 19, I think, when it really came in on top of me. That was the dark, the dark part of my life. Like, this was like, you know, suicidal, like manic depressive, like just so angry, like couldn't be spoken to, so moody, like the worst, like, yeah.
What would happen when people would try and help you?
You know what? Nobody actually knew.
Oh, really?
And that's the thing, yeah. So my parents didn't know that I was even taking drugs at this stage. People around me knew. I remember, it's the one time that I thought, wow, that's a bit strange. It was actually this really pretty girl back home. I was walking out of town one day, and I remember she stopped me walking out of town, out the Ennis Road, and she stopped me and was like, I see you around. She was older, the older group. I see you around and you have so much potential and you just don't realize it. And it's a shame to see it. And it, whatever, what it's just something about that thing just stood out to me massively. So I always knew I had this potential, but I just didn't know what it was. So yeah, and then I just kept taking drugs, Nobody really knew the extent of it, bar like a drug dealer here. Friends probably thought, you know, it's not a casual drug taking, if that's a thing. Mm. Yeah, it was excessive. And when I started, that was it, game over. Like I would start on a Thursday and I was gone till Sunday. Like there was no stopping. Like I didn't know how to stop. I just wanted to be up there. I didn't want to have to go back to normal.
What were you afraid of in the normal world?
The stuff, like, and at the time I don't even know what the stuff was going on in my head, but it just wasn't a happy place. It wasn't a nice place.
Your self-talk, was it?
Self-talk, like, yeah, I just, life on life's terms, man, was just way too hard. Like, it was just way too hard.
What does that mean?
So that means, like, just life in general. Like, life is tough, right? Yeah. Like, you know, life is hard, right? And I just couldn't deal with it.
Yeah.
I just couldn't. I didn't know how to, so I self-medicated.
Yeah.
I took the drugs to get away from that place. And I never wanted to go back to normal again. And even like, and I didn't even have a normal because I was going so high that I was just coming so low. So I just didn't even know what normal was. So normal for me was low, like really low.
Yeah.
And that's when the suicidal thoughts come in because you can't see a light. You genuinely and I know some people I've heard in the past, people have said, I mean, people don't really say it these days because we understand it more now, but you know, suicide is a selfish thing. But can you imagine being in a place that is so dark that your only choice in your head is to kill yourself? Like I had a daughter, like, do you know what I mean? Like, I'm the number one thing in her life. And my brain goes to kill yourself because you're in so much pain. Like, that's the kind of pain that I was in. And I just, you know, I didn't know how to continue with life. I just thought, if my life is going to be like this forever, how can I spend the rest of my life feeling like this? No light, no understanding of a proper recovery or, like, and even saying this out loud to my parents that I'm a drug addict. Like, I'm a failure. Like, I can't, you know what I mean? I can't, like, I'm a failure as a dad. I'm a failure as a person. I'm a failure as a son. So I can't even say that out loud. So it's like, it was just really, really dark time. So then I did attempt suicide. Because I just didn't know what else to do.
Talk to us about that moment.
So that moment was a morning after like a bender. Like, I think it was about a 3-day bender. I got back to my parents' house. They knew that they wouldn't be there, maybe gone to work or something. So I knew I could just get back to the room. And I remember lying in the bed thinking, I can't do this anymore. Like, the come down was so bad. I knew what the next couple of days were going to feel like. And I had antidepressants, and I had a big massive packet of antidepressants, and I put them all out into my hand. Whew, this is mad. I put them all into my hand and I took them all. And then I text my daughter's mom. And it was almost like a suicide note message. I can't even remember now, but and then panic set in for her. She rang my parents. My parents rang an ambulance. The ambulance came out and I was unconscious at that stage. And then brought to the hospital, monitored, I think, I don't know, whatever they did, but I made it through it. And they were looking at me thinking, like, what are you doing? Like, what have you done? And then that's when it just came out. That was like, and like, maybe that was like, I don't know, did I want to die or what was, maybe I just wanted to say to somebody, I need help. Like, I'm like, I really need help. And I didn't know how to ask for it. Like, too proud, like, you know, big, strong Shane, like, and it was too hard to ask for help.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and then when I told them, I went, yeah, they set up an addiction counselor, and I went to the addiction counselor, and I remember coming out of the addiction counselor, like, on a Wednesday or something like this, and when I walked out, and they said, you know, if you use now, you know, you can come back, and I was like, this is going to solve all my problems. like I'll never forget it. I think I'll just go out and use it the weekend. Oh, wow. And then I'll go back in and then I'll just go in my confession on my Monday or Tuesday and then I'll feel grand again. So I went back out the weekend taking drugs.
Wow.
Yeah. And my parents knew. And they were like, I was like, I'm heading out tonight. And they were like, no. They were like, you can't. Like, and they were like, if you go out tonight, you're not coming back. And I was like, you know, you might as well have like, tell me to not to do
red
something.
Yeah,
exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I was like, yeah, see you later, bye. And then I think I was out for a couple of weeks or something like that. Or, you know, I can't remember what it was, sleeping on couches. Like, they wouldn't let me come back. And then another bender. And then I rang one morning and I was like, please, can I come back? I just wanted to get into my own bed. And they were like, you can come back, but you need serious help. So yeah, and then I went home on the Sunday or the Monday morning, something like that. And yeah, I remember just waking up. My dad was standing and was like, right, drag me into the car, brought me down to a counselor. Counselor handed me the phone. That's a treatment center. Talk to them. Just, it was happening so quickly. I didn't even have time to think about it. And before I knew it, I was sitting in a treatment center.
So what was your relationship like with your folks?
Good, like really good, like they were so supportive, like
and the relationship you had with your with Caitlin's mom,
great. Yeah. Like we were together at the time, like there was no, like, you know, there was no, like, she knew,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like because she went out with me, she saw what I was up to. She didn't know the extent of what it was, because of course I was hiding it, you know. Mm-hmm. I wasn't going to tell her what I was doing. So she was aware. She was aware up to the point of when Caitlin was born. She didn't know after that, as far as I remember. Long time ago, but I know, like, it was definitely something that I wasn't telling her. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure, like, she wasn't stupid. But yeah, like, all the, like, the relationship with my parents was like, yeah, I was a moody teenage boy. I had as good a relationship as any moody teenage boy had with their parents.
Yeah.
But they were extremely supportive. Like, you know, and like, oh, why couldn't you turn to them? Because I just couldn't, do you know what I mean? I was too proud, like, mm-hmm. you know. And I, like, the minute I told them, the arms were open. Like,
of course.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They were there. They were there to support anything I needed. It was there.
Did you think it wouldn't be there?
I didn't know. And I was afraid to go there.
Yeah.
Like, I just didn't know.
And we sometimes play a kind of like a thing in our head, a hypothetical story in our head that I can't do this because of this.
Yeah.
Without actually...
And as a whole, like, what I had said is, like, am I a failure as a son? Am I a failure as a dad? Like, can I say this thing out loud? Like, it wasn't an easy thing.
Of course not.
Like, no. You know. So, yeah. And, yeah, but the relationships were good. As good as they could be.
So, when your dad brought you down to the counselor and the counselor to the addiction center... Like, what's that process then? Like, because it's again, you've been in a world where for 6 or 7 or 8 years, you've been looking for that kind of release from life, as you said, right? And then you're now brought into this world where, okay, we're here to help, but do you want help? You know, there's always that question, isn't it? Like, we can only help you if you want help.
Yeah. So I went down for the assessment and I don't know, was it... The counselor that I've been speaking to, or somebody just turned around and said, just be honest with them. They've seen it all before. They've heard it all before. Just be honest with them. So I was like, grand, whatever. What have I got to lose here?
Yeah.
You know, went in, sat down. They were like, how much drugs have you taken over the last 3 days? Told them how much. They were like, right, okay. You have a problem, right? I'm like, oh. Because you go down to these places and I think that unless I'm on the street, then I'm not really an addict. Right, because an addict is somebody that doesn't have a home,
can't function, real world,
you know, like,
yeah,
you know, that was where my brain. So I was like, okay. I'm gonna go down here, tell them. They're gonna be like, dude, you're a casual drug taker, piss off. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? I didn't know what I was going down to, but yeah, they were like, no, you have a problem. And now in hindsight, I look back and go, yes, of course I had a problem, but you just don't know that at the time.
Yeah.
So I went down, I was 100% honest with them, and I just gave it to them. I was like, because I was just at that point, Stephen, where I was like, oh, I just need help now. Do you know what I mean? I'm sick of it. I'm done with it. Maybe there's something over here that, you know, might be different. And then I went in there and it was like opening up the book. Like, it's like, just that's why you do the things.
Yeah.
And it made so much sense. I was like, oh, thank God.
So what was the eureka point that said that it made sense? Because I'm sure there was a lot of unveiling of...
Oh, yeah. So they explained everything to me. They were like, right, so there's a very good chance you do this thing. And I'm like, I do that all the time. Do you do this thing? Yes, I do that thing. They were like, so one of them was like trying to hide from my environments, right? So when I was trying to give things up, I was living in Limerick at the time. I used to go down, my grandmother has a house down in Kilkee, and I used to go down and stay in the house, and I used to drive to work. I was working in Shannon at the time, and I used to drive up and down from Kilkee because I just didn't want to be around Limerick, because Limerick was the problem. Limerick wasn't the problem, I was the problem. But I was just, there was excuses. There was hiding from it, there was moving away, there was anything that I could to get away. So they explained all that stuff to me and it all made sense. I didn't know I was doing that. I just thought I was doing, you know, the best I could. But when they explained to me why I was doing these things, it just made sense,
yeah.
You know? Yeah. And as soon as, like, I have a logical brain, it needs to make sense for me. Mm. It needs to be like, I like to see the scientific facts around things. Like, and it was almost like, there's the book, this is why you do the thing. And I was like, okay, great, like, lovely, I'm open to it.
Savage, yeah.
Yeah.
So how long did that process take before you maybe felt comfortable, or is that even the way to describe it, before you kind of felt you had the tools to manage not taking drugs? Because, was it a case of that you went in, met this person, went through the process, and then you were done? Or did you have moments of weakness?
I still have weaknesses today, dude.
Yeah.
It's a continuous battle. Like, it is. Now, it's not as intense today, or it's not as low as it is today. But yeah, like, still today, I struggle with my mental health. Like, you know, like, there's not, like, I wake up with days of, like, absolute anxiety, like, for sure. I mean, back then, it was different back then. I was much younger, like, there was less responsibility at that age. But there was a lot of support at the time back in Limerick for me. Like, I went to aftercare, I went to meetings, I had counselling. I had a good support network around me. So there was there was really good tools. And that lasted for, I think I was about 18 months sober the first time around. And then it was just like, life, that's it. Sorted. I have figured this out. All the problems in my head, done, sorted out. Though. I've talked to all the people that I've needed to talk to. I've expressed myself. Great. Gonna have me a little beer. Yeah. So I was over in Crete on holidays. I think I was over there for a week and I had a beer and I came back about 6 months later. It was just like, I think I'm going to stay. Like, yeah. For about 3 months, it was grandish. Do you know what I mean? When you go back, you've got this head full of so you have your AA and your NA and you've got this head full of why you do the thing, and then you go out and drink with this head full of why you do the thing, and then it just makes it worse, man.
Okay.
Yeah, because you're doing the thing and you know why you're doing the thing, so it's so much harder. Jeez. Like, it's harder when you go back out. So I kept it together for probably 3 months. It started slipping between 3 and 6 months, and then between 3 and 9 months it was a disaster again. Spiraled right out of control. And I remember just going in, kicking in my mother's door, bedroom door. I was like, I need help. And she was like, I know, like, finally. And this time it was for me. The first time it was for me, but it was definitely for a lot of people around me.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Do the good thing, be the good guy. Like, great.
Go through the process.
Go through the process. You're doing great. And I loved it. Everybody pat me on the back. Well done, Shane. Center of attention. Fair play. You love it. Aren't I great?
Yeah.
And then I go off and slip. And then second time around, everyone's like, yeah, whatever, dude. You know what I mean? You've been here before. Don't really care. So then I'm doing it for myself, right?
So was there a lack of belief in you the second time around? Because to that point, it was like, oh, we've seen this. Or is it a case of, okay, yeah, you can do it. You've done it once. You can do it again.
Yeah, I don't really know the answer to that. I just knew that this time that I had to do it for me.
Yeah.
And it was much harder. A lot of whinging, like, poor me, like, oh, fucking, like, aren't I struggle? I was thinking it was 21 at the time, like 21 years of age, and I can never drink again. And, you know, like I really like, you know, I gave it to myself. Like,
yeah.
I really wallowed in that pity of it, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember going into meetings sharing, and a fella came up to me after one of the meetings and he said, "Here, dude, look, I don't mean anything by this, but I've been listening to you whinging now for months."
he
was
said
like,
to
yeah,
you.
Yeah, yeah, straight out. And he was like, "You either want this or you don't. And you can't drink, you can drink. If you want to drink, go out and drink." He's like, "Stop telling yourself you can't drink, because you can if you want. Do you choose not to, or do you not choose? But you can if you want." And it just, again, one of those moments, you know, when you've got those little, like, you know, those moments in your life that somebody says, I don't even know who this guy is to this day.
Yeah.
But he said that thing to me, and I remember just thinking, "Get your shit together, man. This is for you now. You can sit around and mope all you want, but this is your life now. Accept it or go out drinking." And I knew what drinking did to me, so I didn't want to go back there. So I just pulled my socks up. Yeah, I just pulled my socks up and got stuck in, got stuck into a program.
What did you get stuck into then? Like, what was your motivating factor after that?
So there's a lot of, like, there's a lot of tools around the NA, program of, like, you know, taking up responsibilities within the meetings, like treasurers and, like, and, like, you know, just lots of responsibilities around the meetings. And I took up all that stuff. So you've now got, you know, you're responsible. You have to do things. You have to show up. You have to be at a certain place at a certain time. So stuff like that, tools like that really helped me. And I don't go to many meetings now. Very rarely I'll go to a meeting now, but I absolutely lived that life. Like, I ingrained it into my life for about 6 years. Like, every day, step work, like, really got stuck into it. And I loved it. So I definitely, like, I have a lot that I thanked that program an awful lot. It changed my life.
Yeah, it's fascinating to listen to, because from where I always saw you was that confident character, right?
Yeah.
And that was like a version of you. Now I see you, and I still see you as a confident character, but I see you as a more calm and, like, open, and you're like such a loving character, right? Because, like, it's just, that's always been in you, but there's just, you've expressed it in different ways, right? For me, what I find, what I'm hearing there, is that once you've had something to be accountable for, like in that meeting, and having all those roles and responsibilities, when you're accountable to something, it kind of changes your mindset about doing things, doesn't it? Because you don't want to leave people down.
Absolutely.
Isn't that it? Yeah.
And I mean, I was accountable to my daughter as well. That was the number one, like, like, you know. And the thing that comes into my mind now is, like, lying on the couch, I remember after a bender, and Caitlin's mom, it was my turn, we had broken up at the time, and it was my turn to look after her, and I remember just lying on the couch, and I was pretending that I had a cold or a flu or something, and I remember her just rubbing my head saying, "It'll be okay, Daddy." And I just remember thinking, "You are the worst piece of shit in the world. Like, how have you become this?" Like, so it's those little moments that I just bring myself back to all the time, that, like, I'm accountable as a dad now.
Yeah,
you know.
So like, your life up until, say, 21, 22 is unbelievably colourful, right?
Yeah, madness.
Unbelievably colourful, but. And that color continues, but it just comes in different ways, right? So tell me about the next kind of chapter in your life, when you started focusing on acting, when you started focusing on trying new things, moving to London, all these different, was that around the same time?
Yeah, so it was maybe 21. I stayed in Limerick for a while, worked as a carpenter on sites down there. And I loved Limerick. Like, Limerick's an amazing city. Like, it really is an amazing city. Like, I'm a very proud Limerick man, as I'm sure you are. Like, it's an amazing, amazing city. And there's a lot of amazing people doing really good things down there. I loved being around Limerick, but I always just felt like there was, you know, I was modeling down in Limerick. So I got into modeling. A fellow was running a Mr. Limerick competition.
Go on, I remember it.
I got a phone call and said, "Would you be interested in going doing the Mr. Limerick competition?" And I was like, "Absolutely not, absolutely not. If I go onto a building site after doing a Mr. Limerick competition, I'll be thrown off the building site." So there was talk of it, and somebody came along and said, go on, I'll sponsor you to do it and all this. And, you know, so I just said, ah, sure, look, we'll have a bit of crack on the night anyway. So I went and did it, and I ended up winning it. And then a modeling agency down in Limerick, my good friend Celia Holman Lee down there got in touch at the time and was like, would you be interested in doing a bit of modeling? So I just started modeling. I was just like, and you like, I used to work on the sites, and there used to be, I'd be walking down the site with like a big, like I'd literally have a big lump of timber on my shoulder walking down through the site, and there'd be lads whistling and everything off the, off the scaffolding. I was just like, I never lived it down. But it was good crack. It was good crack. And I just bought into it. You know what I mean? I didn't, you know, I could have very easily got annoyed about it, but I didn't. I bought into it. It was very good crack. And I had some amazing times. And then I ended up getting a modeling agency up in Dublin. And then they would put me forward for a TV thing. I didn't even know what I was doing. And I went in and did a TV thing, and I ended up getting the TV thing. And then I just said, there's a bit of thing in the acting here. And that was around the crash, and there was not much carpentry work. So then I decided I was going to be an actor. And so I went and I auditioned for a college up in Dublin. No idea what it was doing. Rang my neighbor, who was an actor at the time, Aidan Crow. Do you know Aidan?
Yeah.
So I rang Aidan. He was an actor. And I said, is there any chance you could help me with one of these things? It's called a monologue or something. I didn't have a clue what I was doing. He was like, right, come on. So he helped me out, helped me with a monologue. And then I went up and auditioned, and I got into a college in Dublin. Bull Alley in the Liberties. So I went there for 2 years, and then a new drama school opened up called the Lear in Trinity. So I auditioned there, and I got in there, and I did 3 years inside there. That was a tough 3 years. That was like therapy all over again. It was really like, because you're moving a lot with your body.
Okay.
And there's a lot of like
super all expression.
Yeah, a lot of expression, a lot of like letting go of barriers, you know, dropping masks so that you can really find yourself. And so that was a tough 3 years. The first year was really hard, because I was older going back. So I was about 29, 30 when I went in there, and you go in and a lot of them were much younger than me. So I kind of like lived this life outside of, you know, school, and they were coming from school. And they were like, yes, sir, no, sir, kind of thing. And I was like, hold on a second now. So I was asking the questions, and because you're a little bit older, and people were like, pick your battles, Shen. And I was like, no.
Yeah.
No, if I have this thing to say, I'm going to say it. So there was a bit of a struggle there for a while with that.
And you say a struggle, was the struggle that your questions weren't well received? Or was it a case that
it was just a struggle
that you were had to nearly relearn? I had to learn to be a student again.
I had to learn to be a student again, because I had been like, you know, I was a manager, and you know, like,
yeah, because you worked in the pub industry.
Yeah.
So, and that's another area that we could, just before we get into the acting piece, because like you spent a long time in the drinks industry.
Yeah.
Working in various bars, and like your top dog in Dublin, everybody knew you. How did you find yourself in that world?
So that was...
Considering the history and the world that you've come from, right?
Yeah,
and your experiences.
I remember I was so young that I just said, I can't leave... Like, I can't just sit at home in my bedroom all the time. Like, I have to be able to go out. I have to be able to socialize.
Yeah. And be able to manage it.
So I went and had the odd few nights out and stuff like that. But I always knew, like, as soon as somebody started spitting in my ear and I heard the same story for the third time, I was like, right, it's time to get out of here. So I always knew when the exit point was. And then a friend of mine was a bouncer on a door down in Limerick. And they were looking for somebody. They must have been very stuck, because I was very small at the time. and they asked me to come in. So I went in, and I kind of had it because I had been taking drugs in nightclubs, I knew what to look for. I could see it everywhere.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? So I was then going, right, that's happening there. And the guy who was the head bouncer at the time was like, this fella's got a great eye. Like, do you want a job? So I was like, grand. So I went in, and it worked for me, because I was in the atmosphere of the nightclub, but I was working. I had a purpose.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? I was there for a reason. So I can't drink when I'm on the job. So it worked really well. Seriously good socializing, Like, I had great crack doing that. And I was actually teaching a yoga workshop down in Limerick this weekend, and it was mad for me to, it was my first time going back to Limerick to teach yoga. And me in Limerick was being the prick of a fucking bouncer inside in Trinity rooms, kicking people out and being a wanker. Like, I was, you know what I mean? Because that was just the world that I lived in at the time. And now I'm going back down and I'm teaching yoga to people and being really nice. And I'm like, so it was a real, like, full circle moment of, like,
I say that was a proud moment.
Yeah, though. It was. Yeah. I'm a different person now, man. Yeah. You know, like, I really am. Yeah. So it was really nice to go back down there and do that. So sorry, we went off.
You're great. So you've now worked in nightclubs. You're up in Dublin now.
Yeah.
You're working across nightclubs as well. So you've had that kind of, I suppose, foundation of going, right, I'm working, boom, I know what to do. But
yeah.
You were also, when we used to see you were always welcoming, and everybody was always welcome. You had a big smile on your face. Come on in, guys. We'll all look after you. Da, 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 da. And you made it your business to come up and talk to everybody. You know, so you went from that.
But imagine how mental that was my job.
Yeah.
That was my job. I got paid to be out socializing and chatting to people. Like, it was the best. Like, the best. Like, it was amazing. Like, people in here are spending money to be out, and I'm in here getting paid to be out.
Yeah.
Like, it just worked so well for me. You know, I really, really loved it.
It was a perfect balance for you at the time.
And then I got older and, like, you know, the late nights just weren't working and, you know, so.
So then that's when you went to Lear?
No, so I went to the Lear, and then I went over to London afterwards. And I did about 2 years in London, I think. So about 2 years in London, met my wife over there. So I always thought I was going over for the acting. Like, I'm going to be like, I could see my name in big lights, and there I am off. I'm off over to London to be a star.
Yeah.
Yeah, that didn't happen. I've done a couple of decent gigs along the way, and I still do it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it was definitely not what I was expecting, right?
Yeah.
It's a tough gig.
Yeah.
And I absolutely love it. Like, I absolutely, like, even now when I do auditions, when I do, like, and I still train and I still do scene studies. And when I'm acting, man, it's just so alive. Like, I just love it. Like, it's an amazing thing.
Do you find it as a complete release?
It's a release. It's an absolute release. It's an opportunity to pretend to be somebody else.
Yeah.
Now
you've got the skill sets to be able to remove any barriers.
Yep.
Let your hair down, for want of a word, and actually just be a potential person.
Yeah. Like, it's great. It's great crack. Like, walking out onto stage, man, is just the best buzz ever. Like, it is the best buzz. Like, it's unbelievable, man. It's like something takes over. You, like, walk out and then you walk off and go, I have no idea what happened up there.
Yeah.
No idea. But it was amazing. Like,
it's funny, isn't it? Because at the start of the conversation, you talked about Shane wanting to be center of attention.
Yeah, of course. And that's always there.
And
it is always
but
there.
But you
it's
found
still
a way
there.
To do it in a way that's enjoyable and safe.
Yeah. And I found a way to do it where I can also help other people.
Yes.
I stand in the middle of a room at a yoga studio. Right?
So this is the other piece.
And it's helping other people.
How did you find your way into yoga?
So I did it in drama school. So I got into it there, hated it. Like, absolutely. I've tried it
a few times now.
Yeah.
And I must say,
it's not, like, for everyone.
It's tough.
Like, it's not for everyone until you find the right teacher.
Okay.
So if you're listening to this and you went to yoga and you thought it was shite, I highly recommend go to as many teachers as you can, because I trust me, you will find a teacher. And once you do, game over.
Yeah.
It's just, it changed
Maybe
my life.
Game on.
Yeah. It's next level. Yeah. So I was practicing it at the time. It was real slow. My brain was real fast. So I was just like, this is a load of bollocks. Like, and then I remember arguing with yoga teachers and going, for what? Like, why? Why are we doing this thing? And I didn't really get the answers I was looking for. Again, my logical brain comes in and it says, like, well, if I'm doing this thing, why am I doing it? I'm not just doing it for the sake of doing it. Why? Right? And I didn't really get a why answer. So I was like, yeah, bullshit. Yeah, not for me. Airy fairy. Like, off
gone.
You go. Yeah, gone.
Yeah.
And then I hurt my back over in London, and I went to a hot yoga class in London, and then I could relate that to the gym. Right? Good buzz, like, sweat pouring off me, getting bang for my buck. Like, lovely. There's something here. So I kept going to the hot stuff, really enjoyed it. And then my brain, it started to quieten down, man. Started to quieten down. And, like, I've had periods between when I've stopped taking drugs. It's been a long time now since I actually started practicing yoga regularly. I haven't had to take antidepressants anymore. Now, I'm not saying you should just come off your antidepressants. No, like, I'm not a, you know, I'm not a, like, I'm not, you know, a doctor by any means or anything like that. But I just, I used to have to go through, I'd get around 2 years, 3 years, and then the brain would start creeping back in again. The darkness would start coming in, especially around, and the darkness of outside, the Septembers, the Octobers, Novembers.
SADs kicking in. Yeah.
And then I'd, you know, and I'd start getting into a low place, and then I'd just go, right, you don't, I know how low you can go. You don't want to go there. Get in and get yourself an antidepressant.
Okay.
So I used to do, have to do that. And then I just started practicing yoga, man. Started moving, my brain slowed down. The darker periods started coming, but I just didn't feel as low. So I didn't need to have to go and get my antidepressant. I didn't need to have to do that thing. Yeah, and then, man, things just slowed down. Things just slowed down, man. I just learned how to use my breath. I learned how to just work with, like, so you're bringing the body into a place of difficulty. Like, the poses are hard.
Yeah.
And then it's like, right, what's happening when I'm here? Like, what's my internal conversation when I'm in a pose? What's happening to my breath? Can I slow my breath down? Can I use my brain, my breath to calm my nervous system, even though I'm in a little bit of trouble here? And I was able to take that off the mat then. I was able to take it off the mat, and was able to, I was less, way less reactive. The fire that was there wasn't as much. Do you know what I mean? Still reactive. We're all reactive. Yeah, we all get pissed off.
Yeah.
So I'm not like I'm floating around in a magic carpet or anything, like, you know, but I'm definitely less reactive to what I used to be.
If you get a space of anxiety or a worry or tension or concern or whatever it is.
First thing that comes into my head is, where's your breath?
Really?
Yeah. How are you breathing?
Really?
First thing that comes into my head, how are you breathing? Generally, I'm up in the chest. There's a state of panic.
Yeah.
I'm in that, you know, fight or flight of my nervous system, right? And then I go, no, you have, your breath is your tool to calm your nervous system down. I start to breathe into my belly. I start to breathe a little bit deeper. I breathe into my lower back. I slow my breath down. And it just gives me that opportunity to just check. Just slows things down, man. Breath work for me is just, I'm doing a training on breath. I'm selling breath work here. On the, but I'm doing a training on breath work and meditation at the moment. So with my teacher is Michael James Wong. And he's got a breath work app called Just Breathe. And it's amazing, like, game changer.
Interesting you say that, because I had Breathe with Niall from a Wim Hof instructor, but I had him on the podcast as well, and like that, the breath work that he spoke about was very much about just being present, letting anything that's worrying you go. So at every exhale, it was all just let it go. And we did that with cold water submersion, and we did it with obviously breathing. There's the kind of the holotropic breathing, as well as the kind of breathing to tempo and that type of thing.
Yeah. It blows my mind. Sorry to interrupt, if there's somebody actually that works in schools, right, listening to this, I'd love if they got in touch with me. Like, I'd love that. I would love to try and get this into schools, man, because it just blows my mind how I didn't know about this stuff when I was younger. And if I'd known about this stuff, like, I think it's like, I listened to a podcast actually recently about a breathwork expert and a breathing expert. OCD, like anxiety, it's all because we're not breathing properly. Mm-hmm. We don't know how to breathe.
Yeah.
And the reason, and like all of this stuff, it all related back to how you're breathing. Like, it's mental how we know so little about breath. And it's getting there for sure. But it's our tool, man. It really, really is.
It's far more powerful than we realize.
Way more powerful than we realize. Yeah.
And I think if, like, with somebody like yourself who's been through such an incredible journey, like, that could have helped you when you were in school. Like, it may or may not.
Having the tool. Like, yeah. I remember the first time in drama school, we were doing some breath work in drama school, because breath work is part of drama school. I didn't really understand it as much back then, but I remember we had to breathe into our belly. And I was looking at him going, what do you mean breathe into my belly?
Yeah.
Sure, my lungs are here, up in my chest.
Yeah.
So how am I supposed to breathe down into my belly? And then I couldn't move my belly while I was breathing, because I had all of that restriction around my belly. I didn't know how to breathe deep. I didn't know how to slow my breath down. And I remember he put an apple on my belly when I was lying on the ground. And he said, right, just try and lift the apple with your belly. And I couldn't do it.
Wow.
Like I just didn't know how to breathe deeper. Because I was always breathing into my chest. No wonder I was full of anxiety. No wonder I was rattled. Mm-hmm. Like, I was continuously sending a signal to my nervous system that there's a problem.
You were in flight mode constantly.
Yeah, constantly. Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
And so now with the work that you're doing in breath work, and how you've connected it, obviously, with the yoga and the instructing, like, what do you say to people who are reluctant to try it? Because I always find when you do something new, it doesn't happen overnight.
No, of course it doesn't.
You have to buy into the process of it. So as I always say, if I lift a weight in the morning, I'm not strong tomorrow.
Yeah.
If to go down that whole process and that whole consistency.
Yeah.
Like if somebody's talking about, maybe somebody is finding that they can't breathe at the moment, or that they're always breathing on their chest. I know a lot of people who suffer from anxiety, and from somebody who's, so I give you, just bear with me now, because about 4 or 5 months ago, I had my first ever panic attack,
right?
Yeah. I was in the car, and I had to stop the car, and I was like, oh my God, what's happening? I'd never had one before, right? And I thought the whole world was coming in on top of me. I couldn't catch, so I have asthma. So I was like, oh, maybe it's just my asthma. I'll take my inhaler. No relief. And there was lots of things going on between health and worries about other things. And there was just loads of things in my brain. And I'm always the type of person who's like, it'll be grand. We'll get through it one day at a time. I'm always that type of person who's, oh yeah, I have my down days like everybody else, but I'm pretty optimistic about things figuring itself out, because you work hard and you put yourself in the right positions, and that you've got a good foundation in terms of friendship and family and relationships and all that. But that day, it just consumed me, and I couldn't control it at all. And it was only got to a point where I'd say it was about an hour into it. I didn't know what to do, who to ring, and I just started just breathing like slowly and calmly, and it took me about another 40-45 minutes to just get my act together, but I didn't understand the breath work at the time. I just trying to calm myself down. Possibly if I had known about the breath work and what you're saying is like, where's my breath, that first question, possibly it would have taken me only 15 minutes or five minutes.
But even that it didn't take you 15 minutes, it took you a bit of time, but your instinct was to slow your breath down.
Yeah.
Your instinct was there to calm yourself down. So it, like, we know it, we just don't utilize it as much as we should, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, like going back to the question of like how should people approach it? Again, it's finding that teacher. And like, it's not going to, as you said, it's not going to happen overnight. Mm. So in my meditation practice, like I get lazy. Of course I get lazy. Like path of least resistance. That's the human response. Like, you know what I mean? As a human, I'm just generally a lazy person. I always think I should be doing more. Like that's just, you know, that's just how I am. So in my meditation practice, I'll meditate, like a morning meditation, you know, afternoon meditation, whatever it is. And things are great. Life gets busy. I'll just skip the meditation today. I won't do it. Grand, didn't do meditation yesterday. Right. I'm off the wagon now. I just, you know, I'll miss it again. And then it starts to come back. Things start to slip. Mind starts to wander. Things just aren't going as smoothly as they can be. And it's because I stopped my meditation. And it's just that opportunity just to slow down. Just a bit of stillness. And some days I'll do the meditation and it'll be all over the place. Like my head will be racing, right? But I still took an opportunity to sit down and try to slow things down. That in itself is enough. Like, I'm not levitating in the meditation.
Yeah, and it's not going to be perfect every time.
You know what I mean? And like. Yeah. But it's an opportunity to go, right, can I quieten things down here? Right? And it's just helped me massively. So yeah, I recommend, like, yoga classes are great. I teach all around Dublin. Like, you know, look me up. Message me, ask questions. I can talk about this. I can bore people to death about this stuff. Yeah, like, and I'm so passionate about it. Like, because it has changed my life so much, that's why I'm so passionate about it. And people laugh at the fact, like, people that I went to drama school with laugh now because I'm a yoga teacher. They're like, how did you end up being a yoga teacher? You hated it. You used to fight with the yoga teacher. Like, how did you end up here? Something changed, man. It changed my life. Like, it's medicine. It's movement medicine, dude. It's just, yeah, it's magic stuff. It really is.
Let me ask you one or two questions, just because I think what you've shared here is an unbelievable story about a life that could have gone so many different ways, mm-hmm. right? You could have. I'm so thankful you're here, right?
Me too, dude. Because right? I would have been dead.
I genuinely am so thankful you're here as a friend and as somebody who's seen you grow. It's such a privilege to be able to sit down as two lads from Limerick and to have a conversation like this.
Yeah.
It's absolutely class.
Yeah.
And I'm so, so grateful you're here. If you were to pass on a message to a young 8-year-old Shane, right, 7-year-old Shane, right, at that moment when you lost your brother, you were in a world of of pain, a world of uncertainty, what message, considering the world that you've seen, what message would you share with him now?
Do you know what, right, and it's gonna sound wanky, right, I wouldn't pass the message on. Do the things you did, because dude, I'm fucking proud of where I am now, right? I really am, and I've worked really hard to be where I am today. So I wouldn't pass the message on. I wouldn't change a thing, nothing. Yeah, that's, and it, like, you know, that's the first thing that comes into my head is like, you've had an amazing, amazing life.
Yeah.
You've done really, really good. You do really good things today. You help people every day, man. I go in and teach a yoga class and I help somebody in that room. That for me blows my mind, man. That's all I ever wanted to do, is help people. Yeah. That's what makes me happy, and I realize that.
Yeah.
Like, there's a borderline there. You can become a people pleaser. I'm not a people pleaser. I know where my limits are. I know when to say, right, now is not the time. But when I'm in that room, dude, like, I'm there to help people. And people come up to me afterwards and like, they say to me, oh, you know, this came up. I got stressed about this during the week, and I remember that breathing thing you said, and I was able to slow it down. Music to my ears, man. You know what I mean? Like, my heart just opens when I hear that stuff. Like, I think
that's unbelievable, because my dad has this phrase in his life. He says it's the same script, just different actors, right? And I think there's a lovely sentiment.
I'm a good
in
actor,
that.
And you're a shit actor.
I'm shocked. Yeah, I'm shocked. Yeah. But this is the thing, is like, we all face different challenges, and some, can be life-threatening, and others can be mentally challenging, physically challenging, emotionally, all that stuff. But in all those challenges, we become better. Like, we 100% become better. We 100% get to a point where we learn from every moment of challenge or darkness. It helps us to become a better person. And I think through all the different challenges and darkness that you faced, you've become a remarkable person. And
thank
like
you.
The fact that you're able to say and sit here and share the story that you've been on with absolute pride is just brilliant. And I'm so thankful you're here. So thankful you shared this with me. If there's anything, so people would love to get in touch. I'm sure they would, right? How do they get in touch with you?
So I'm on Instagram, I think is probably where I'm most active. Yeah. So I'm on there. Shane Mark Len is my Instagram handle. Feel free to get in touch. My phone number is, no, I'm not going
to. Your missus won't be happy with that one.
It's Limerick boys again. No, we're gone past that now, pal. it's just amazing, man, that we live in a world where, and we don't talk about enough, but we live in a world where we can have an open conversation about our mental health. We can talk about things like, you know, growing up in the 90s, man, you didn't talk about that stuff. You just didn't, like, you know, but like, imagine, and this is follow on from the last podcast with Brent, like, just, you know, we need to talk more about it. We really do. And it's a mental, the amount of people, I still go into therapy. Not because I'm like at a really low stage or anything like that. Like, I'm never as low as what I used to be, but I always go, what's going on? It's my time to go in and be accountable for what's going on in my head. Really be accountable. Really listen to what my thoughts are saying to me. So like, having those opportunities, and then I'll come out of therapy and then I'll bump into somebody like, oh, I have your busy day. Yeah, just coming from therapy. And then somebody will go away. Yeah, I was doing that as well for a while. And people just open up. You know what I mean? It opens up the conversation of like, Jesus, we can talk about this stuff now. It's phenomenal. Like, it's phenomenal that we live in a world where we can do that now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I just wanted to follow up on that from Brent's podcast as well, that like, let's keep talking about this. Let's open this. And I know we are talking about it, but we can talk about it more.
Yeah, you're giving me goosebumps here, because even from that is like two lads having a real open conversation, being able to share loads of learnings from our life at different stages, right? We're not brave. We're not courageous. We should normalize it. And that was Brent's whole point is, let's just normalize it.
Yeah.
And I was never an advocate of therapy until I went to therapy.
Yeah.
And now I'm such an advocate of it because I just didn't understand because I was afraid.
Of course.
And now I understand how it can help people. And I think you're dead right. The more we say it, there's and I've said it a couple of times in different episodes, but Carl Rogers is a famous philosopher, and he says, what's personal is universal. So what you're going through or the worries that you have, once you share them, I probably can relate, you know?
Yeah.
So it's important to share.
Yeah, it is.
Shane, thank you very much, man.
Thank you very much, Stephen. I really, really appreciate you allowing me to come on here and share my story, and I hope it can help somebody else.
Thank you. Once again, thank you for joining me on season 4 and taking part in this journey where we talk to people like you and me about what motivates them, what inspires them, and ultimately what makes them tick. I've learned so much from the various conversations I've had, and I hope you can take something from this that you can apply to your life. That's why this podcast has been created. I'm very proud of it, and I'm very thankful for everybody who's joined me so far. Thank you all for listening. We'll